it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Well, you heard of Shark Week on, like, Discovery Channel. This is kind of like Shark Week on this show. We're getting the ADs from the Pac-12 Conference Universities on the show. I got a whole bunch of them lined up, and I was excited to put Scott Barnes, the Oregon State Athletic Director, at the top of the list. He is joining us now. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Look it. Hey, the smoke is cleared. The fall colors are here, and we're going to be playing some football. Couldn't be better.
I love that. Tell me one thing you did this weekend. I talked all in the open of the show about the yard work I was doing and three kids. What did Scott Barnes do at his house?
Saturday, really odd day. Watched some football at home. Did some honey-do list items. But then Sunday, found a little mountain stream up in the mountains outside of Oak Ridge and did a little fly fishing. Beautiful day.
Love that. Where'd you learn to fly fish? When did that start for you?
About 20 years ago, I was motivated to learn how to fly fish because I was so bad at golf and so frustrated with golf. I hung my clubs up and started to learn how to fly fish from some friends, and it's been a passion of mine ever since.
Yeah, because you're out in the outdoors, you're relaxed, it's you, there's a little gamesmanship involved. When you catch, are you a catch and release guy, or what do you do?
Barbless hook. Catch and release everything.
You come home relaxed.
Yeah, it is. It's fun. You learn something new every time you go out. There is an art and a skill to fly fishing, and you always learn something, and you always get a little better at it. So it's a lot of fun, and it does get you unplugged at least for a while.
Scott Barnes with us, Oregon State AD. We were talking just before you came on about no fans in the stadium. You know, some of the colleges are allowing the band in. Some are allowing family, friends. Some are having limited engagement. Is that, as you understand it, firm? Will there be no fans, or is that still a fluid discussion?
Well, John, it's a great question. And remember, I mean, all of our decisions are ultimately informed by our state and local health authorities. I know we say that a lot. So whatever decision might be made at the league level still is not executed until your state and local health authorities approve it. We're, you know, it's interesting. We've got, when you think about just your game ops people and your players and the numbers that are needed before you even go to, for instance, immediate family members of players or immediate family members of coaches. So the current guidelines here in Oregon, we're working, you will continue to work with the Benton County Health and the state on where to go from there. But right now, what we've suggested is no fans per the Pac-12, other than limited family members. And then we'll do a look in, and I think this is really wise and important. There's so many dynamics, and things change so often that having that look in, and for us, we'll look in prior to January 1 to see where everything sits as we move into basketball and other sports. But that's where it sits right now, and we'll manage that according, again, to our local health authorities.
All right, so are you saying that there will be limited family members in the stadium, or there won't be? Like for Oregon State home games,
we're saying that there for us there likely wouldn't be given the current restrictions, and I say that because of the number of people required to put on a game even without fans, John. we exceed the limits just by that. So we're going to have to get some movement on that to make that happen. And certainly, we'll, as we have throughout, we'll continue to have dialogue, weekly meetings with the county, continue dialogue with the state on what that could look like later. But right now, we're going to have a hard time just getting our own operations people, student athletes, coaches, and all those individuals it takes to put on a game into the stadium. So work to be done there.
Scott Barnes, Oregon State AD, is our guest. As the decision was coming down the pipeline, there was a lot of discussion on whether teams would start on Halloween or November 7th. You end up unified as a conference. What kind of input was Oregon State giving to the Pac-12 when it came to that decision-making process?
Well, John, it all had to do with the readiness of our student-athletes. And Jonathan and his student-athletes, our student-athletes, were ready. So we could have moved on the 31st as it relates to the readiness factor of our student athletes, physically and mentally. And it is about half. They're about half of the schools that could have been either were trying to get there or were ready, and about half that didn't. So it was to move to November 7th was an analytical easy decision to be in alignment as a conference and to start playing. And we couldn't be more excited to get ready to go.
You obviously get some football games and you're going to be playing football at the same time as others, which is good. That daily testing, who pays for the testing? Does that fall on Oregon State? Does the conference pay for it? Who foots the bill ultimately?
Well, the conference obviously resourced that, and that goes through the conference. They'll take care of it, and it'll be a reduction in overall revenue at the end. Anytime the conference, takes care of an initiative on the front end, we all ultimately have a reduction in our revenue, and that's simply because the conference is passing through those revenues tests anyway. Everything after operations goes to revenue. So and ultimately it'll be paid for on the back end by us, by each institution, via a bit of a reduction in the ultimate revenue.
Your conversation with Jonathan Smith as this is going on, obviously, there's a Pac-12 decision to be made, but getting to play, I mean, this is a coach that has to be chomping at the bit to get back onto the field. What was that conversation like?
Well, multiple times a day at times, excited as we got closer. We just feeling excitement for our student athletes and for Jonathan and his staff to get going. There's always twists and turns. And so some days, when you think about the process over the last months, two steps forward, one back, twists and turns along the way to finally get to a place where we have a path forward, we can turn the page in the chapter is really exciting. And I couldn't be more excited for particularly our student athletes who now have a clear path forward, something to get ready for, something that's tangible in front of them. And that's November 7th.
We've talked about if you had no football at all, I know you were modeling several different possibilities for the season what that would do to your budget. You end up on seven-game season. What does that do for your budget? What is the revenue that is gained by playing seven in Oregon State's world?
Well, it's obviously by playing seven, we'll get close to the TV revenue from Fox and ESPN, and so that's millions of dollars. Frankly, haven't put a pen to it. We've got now that we get to play, we've got to actually get those games in and come out the other side. But it's when we're looking at 50 plus million dollar revenue shortfall across everything that we do, this is substantial. but it doesn't make up the majority of our losses. It makes up a sizable amount, and we're pleased with that. We're excited about that. You know, a lot of folks have talked about this wasn't a money decision. It really wasn't. None of us discussed that when we were making decisions. It was sort of the outcome after those decisions were made, and so now it's time to sort of piece that together. What does that really mean financially? And of course, we're looking at that and scenario planning again, because we do now need to get all those games in.
How much did preserving 2021 factor into the decision for the Pac-12 to say, look, we are going to play? In that, you have spring football where it's supposed to be, ideally, and then you don't have to try to jam a bunch of games into a calendar year. How much was the preservation of 2021 a victory by playing early?
Well, I think it was an absolute victory. I don't, in terms of the decision-making process, the CEOs would have to speak to that. But in terms of preserving 21 and having the flexibility to play next year a whole season, put our student athletes back in, and look, you know, playing to the end of the year here and looking at the spring, might the spring look a little different too? I don't know, but we have a chance to play to practice in a traditional sense in the spring and have a traditional season next year, and that means the world not only to our student athletes but Beaver Nation, college football generally, college athletics. It's significant. It's a sign, a hopeful sign that we're going to return to some sort of normal, whatever that new normal is. And yeah, that's important.
You're scheduling, next year you've already got Purdue, Hawaii, and Idaho on the football schedule. And as I look at the non-conference games, you really don't have an opening until 2026 and then 2028 and beyond. Are you interested in getting that Oklahoma State game back, or does that ship sail and you just write it off as 2020 was a weird year?
Yeah, we'll that final decision has been made, but we'll look at all the options and make a decision based on what's available and go from there. In a lot of ways, I think just starting anew and maybe getting a different series going. We don't want to stray from our model. Want a home and home with a A5, and we want a group of five in FCS. But we'll see. We'll see what that looks like in filling those spots. And it'll be interesting to see, what the availability looks like on the college football landscape with all the changes this year.
What are ADs talking about? Because I know you guys have your own discussions. You're out fly fishing. You got five or six ADs with you. What are those discussions including? Are you guys talking about scheduling? Are you talking about the budget and, some tough decisions you've all had to make with your staff? What are the talking points right now with ADs?
I'll tell you what, John. If I was on the fly fishing stream with five ADs, I would hope that most of our conversations didn't have anything to do with our job. But that said, it's really, I think we all are really laser focused on the future. And when I say there's so many things, John, that have happened from the social unrest that's occurred to COVID, to the name, image, and likeness piece, and the student athlete bill of rights coming down as we look at potential federal legislation around student athlete bill of rights, name, image, and likeness, and compensating student athletes. So we're all drawn to look out into the future at what might athletics look, intercollegiate athletics look like in 5 years, depending on all of these forces that are on us. And so I would say, certainly, yeah. What's tomorrow and the next day? But there's as much focus on the future of college athletics as I've seen it in 30 years relative to the items I've just mentioned that are out there.
There's been a lot of fiscal irresponsibility. I mean, we've all seen it. I'm not going to point a finger at any one. I mean, the collective might be might be responsible as much as anything. There's an arms race that's happened with facilities and coaching salaries. Is there a course correction coming, or can you afford to course correct given that, you know, this is an arms race in Power 5 football?
Yeah, you would hope so. You know, you'd hope so, and never in my lifetime had I ever thought that, well, maybe, you know, maybe the answer is federal legislation. Antitrust exemption is an example. We have to get our head around this, and it's not sustainable. So we have to find a way to manage it and to course correct, if you will, in some form or fashion. Because Congress is literally driving the train on intercollegiate athletics as it relates to some of the things I've mentioned, maybe there's a place there for this conversation as well. I don't know. But it's something that is not sustainable. And as much as it's not sustainable, we have to find a solution soon.
The Reser Stadium project, people obviously blown me up over this, asking what does the pandemic, what does you returning to play, you know, the deficits in the budgets, what does that mean to the project, if anything?
Yeah, John, I appreciate the question. You know, it goes back to our original goals for this project, and that was to lift our program, to create opportunities across our entire campus, to do it in a way that was fiscally responsible and created revenue out the other side for our operations. And none of that's changed. The donors that specifically wanted to participate or want to participate in this project are still there. And so we continue to move this forward and are excited about the progress we've made. We set out of the gate this would be a project that we'd open in fall of 2023, and we will do that. We're seeing some economies, not only in efficiency and how we've delivered this project, but also in the market. It's changed. The escalation factors just aren't there like they used to be. So even more good news towards completing this project.
Schedule will be out this week. Do you play a role in the schedule? Do you get approval of the schedule? What happens when it comes across an athletic director's desk?
Yeah, so there's, it's groupthink, and you know, we couldn't be more excited when you think about football. And Merton Hanks, our, 24/7 football operations guy, and others involved from the league who are working and proposing options to the ADs. Ultimately, the ADs vote on those, on a option, and we move forward from there.
All right, so we get multiple proposals, or they just say, here's an A, here's a B, or how does that work?
Yeah, it depends on the viability of what we're talking about. I think that, principally, competitive equity is really important, flexibility. But I think we'll see two or three options.
Man, you're going to have, it's just going to be so hard. Nobody's going to be happy. I mean, we know, you're going to get four home games for some, three home games for others. Hey, we'll make it up to you next year or 2 years from now. I mean, I think it's going to be really tricky.
It is. It always is. Particularly when you have, typical pieces in place, protecting your rivalry game dates and this and that, and it becomes even trickier in a normal situation. But we're going to take some of those guardrails out and just be as flexible as we can to get this thing done. And you're right, it's a process of compromise for everybody.
Would you rather have the Oregon State game early to ensure that you get it, or do you try to keep it in its traditional home as close to Thanksgiving as possible?
Yeah, I like to keep it as traditional as possible. If it's not there sometime a little bit later, I think would be good. And relying on the protocols in place and hopefully we get every single game in and maybe even a bowl game at the other end of it.
There you go. All right, Scott Barnes, I appreciate you making time for us and connecting with this great state and all your fans out there. And good luck this season. I appreciate you.
Okay, thanks so much, John.
Talk to you. There he is, the Oregon State Athletic Director. I got more information from him than I got from the Pac-12 Conference on scheduling. So he'll get, the ADs will get proposals in front of them ultimately. I still don't know who it is who is setting the schedule. Merton Hanks, he mentioned him. I suspected he'd be involved because the Pac-12's initial release said Merton Hanks would be involved with scheduling. But good stuff from Barnes on both the Reister Stadium project, which appears as a university-wide project. That's good to hear that it's not been derailed by this. Also, on the Civil War, or what used to be called the Civil War, now the Oregon State, or the Platypus Bowl, or whatever you want to call it, that game being as traditional as possible, maybe the last game of the Pac-12 regular season schedule could be in December, maybe right before that championship weekend. Excellent stuff from Scott Barnes. Tomorrow on the show, Rob Mullins, Oregon's AD. Later in the week, Martin Jarmond at UCLA, he's the AD there. Mark Harland at Utah will be on the show. Pat Chun at Washington State will be on the show. Jen Cohen at Washington will be on the show, among others. It's Shark Week. No, it's AD Week on this radio show. Leave it right here. The NBA Finals matchup is set. It's Miami against Los Angeles. Big market, big market. NBA's got to like it. Heat, Lakers. It is the subject of our big splash.
This is
the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there. Must be
the big splash.
Eric Spoelstra, Jimmy Butler, Duncan Robinson, the Heat.
Iguodala back to Butler. Adebayo. Double team out Robinson. Robinson for three. Bang! Duncan Robinson from downtown. And the lead is 15.
Look at Bam's eyes once he realizes Duncan Robinson is on the weak side wide open. On point pass. Knockdown shooters do what they do.
Do what they do. The Heat did what they did. They made it to the NBA Finals. They will get the Lakers as a prize for getting there. And, of course, a lot of people looking at this Finals matchup. And if you like the Heat, you can get the Heat at better to 3-1 odds to win this series. Game one of this series, obviously, coming up. And this will be a – is this a 5 p.m. game that's coming up on Wednesday? Is that right?
Yeah, it sounds about right. Generally, they start those games around 5.
I like that it fell on Wednesday and not it's not ending up like, you know, the series both ended early and it's against Monday Night Football or Thursday Night Football. It'll get its own day. We'll talk later in the show with our NBA insider, Adam Sussman, about what that means, who he likes in the series.
It's actually a 6 o'clock tip on Wednesday now that I see it. Yeah, 6 okay. o'clock on ABC.
I saw 5. I don't know what time zone I'm in right now. But isn't that fun? Isn't that weird? Like,
yeah.
Shouldn't they just make a uniform decision across all sports leagues that, hey, we're going to give times in, you know, it'll always be given in, you know, Eastern time, or just pick one because I got local time doesn't help me, you know? And I guess with my.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald
Face. Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.